you go all out on the sprint, and then you get a certain amount of rest. And I mean, we haven't put a heart rate monitor on them, but ideally, they're getting back into during the rest, they're getting back into whatever that ideal heart rate is, and then they go again. So, for instance, there was a study done on baseball pitchers, and when they were throwing in the bullpen, their heart rate was in the neighborhood, I think, of between 150 and 170, something like that. So that when they did their speed training or their power training, their sprinting for aerobic power, they would do sprints that put them into that same heart rate zone, and then they would rest until their heart rate came back, and then they would do it again. I mean, is that kind of what you're talking about in terms of, you know, trying to train these kids physiologically in the same as well as we're training them skill-wise on the field? I mean, is that in the right direction, or?
Well, it's, I understand what you're saying, and I think what that is, that's garbage. Because you're dealing with, I'm assuming you're a coach of the USA team and you're a college coach, you're dealing with girls from 18 to, say, 25 or 26, depending on which team you're with at a certain time of the year.
Uh-huh.
They're capable of heart rates much higher than that. And if you don't take them up, again, see, my system is high load, high volume, and high velocity. That means your heart rate better get up there also. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to support all of this high load, high volume, high velocity. So I agree in the sense of you want to train where you're going to perform. But I think more importantly for a pitcher, it would be that they accelerate their heart rate to move at maximal velocity in the correct position, and then in between pitches, recover back down to a level that allows them to regenerate. I don't know which anaerobic system you're training because you didn't say, but to regenerate and fulfill the requirements to be able to do it again. Now, you have to make sure that you avoid getting into a restorative phase. So depending upon how long, let's say we have somebody, we have one of your girls and they sprint and they get their heart rate up to 170. In my system, they would sprint as long as they could until that heart rate began to drop. Then they would take their rest. As soon as their heart rate returned to whatever level we determined, they would again sprint again. Mm-hmm. Now mentally and emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, most people aren't going to be ready to do that right away because it's extremely challenging. There's a huge cost to it, and the cost is you feel like crap.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the point you have to get to. People have designed systems that allow people to feel comfortable yet mimic what the greatest athlete did in the world. It's kind of like a leg press compared to a squat or a leg extension compared to a true knee extension on a glute ham. You know, it kind of imitates what the best do, and it makes you feel like you're doing what the best do, but physiologically you're not producing anything near what they did. So right church, wrong pew kind of thing.
Okay.
Hey, Jay, this is Eddie Crocker.
Yes.
I don't want to go back and necessarily revisit something we talked about, but often you hear the term burnout. You know,
uh-huh.
You don't want to burn a kid out. You want to burn an athlete out. What do you do in relation to this intense training that would relate to keeping them mentally eager to keep the training going? You know, you don't want to take the child, I guess, or the athlete and get them mentally exhausted so that, you know, they say, hey, coach, I'm overtraining. Yeah, and you hear that, especially in high school athletics.
Absolutely, you hear that all the time. But you hear that with people who don't eat well, who don't sleep and dream, who don't act like an athlete 24 hours a day. They try to act like an athlete when they go to the gym. Humans are capable of enduring extreme amounts of work. But what we've done is we've rationalized that, well, if you do this, then no, this is going to happen. And if you do this, then, no, your heart rate's going to stay elevated for too long. And if you do this, then you're not going to burn the proper fuel. And I say, baloney. It's all in the preparation. And having the kid understand what they're doing in the weight room is not the be-all and end-all. It's to improve their sport. The same as sleep, the same as dreaming, the same as stimulating their mind through academics. It all has a part in what they do on the field of play. And burnout is just a cool little term we gave so that people could generate income by coming up with all kinds of recovery protocols. You know, Chris mentioned earlier, or I think it was Aaron maybe, that I have unique methods of restoration. Well, let me tell you one unique method of restoration right now, and that's to train at high velocity. And that's not 90% or 85% or 91%. It's 93% to 100%. That itself will recover anyone from anything. See, everything is within sight of us already. And we can all rationalize and come up with excuses because we don't want to get to this uncomfortable feeling. Or as coaches, we don't want to make the kids uncomfortable because our stipend is determined by how many wins we get or how many kids move on to college or, in the case of college coaches, how many move on to the professional levels. In America, we're producing 1 out of 3,000. What a freaking joke. We're losing out on huge potential because we don't push people. We give them an out. We do not push them far enough. This system, no one in my system, and you're welcome to talk to anyone I've ever trained, anyone in my gym right now. Chris, you are in my gym, and you have the freedom to speak to anyone who walks in there, no matter their age, no matter how long they've been coming. Never, ever have we experienced overtraining. Because we work on every aspect of what comprises a human. You see, when you go into a weight room, people lift weights. They don't participate with their mind. They don't participate emotionally the same as when they get out there on a wrestling mat and you're mano-on-mano with a mean-looking person across from you who wants to destroy you maybe more than you want to destroy them. That's how you avoid overtraining, by giving your best. See, we're meant to work at high levels. Our organs are designed to work at extreme levels, not moderate levels and low levels. That's how we accelerate the death process. Let me tell you a little story about one of the Russian coaches that came to my house, spent several months with my wife and I and my kids. We were driving down the road one day, and needless to say, in Arizona, there's a lot of people out doing recreational running, let's say, jogging. And we were stopped at a stop sign. And the coach said, "Xenia, please, let's get out and tell this person not to run slow. They are making themselves die faster." I said, "Well, you can't really do that in the United States." "Well, yes, we can. We should get out. It is our job to do this. We are strength coaches. We are supposed to inform them the right thing to do." One day, my wife and I were training, and the Russian coaches, obviously we can't all do this in the United States, but they draw blood after everything to monitor what's happening and all kinds of information. And I had to answer a phone call, and I'm in answering the phone call, and all of a sudden I hear this loud screaming, "Shenyaru, Shenyaru, please, coming to here, please." So I go out, I hung up on the phone, went out there, and I said, "What's wrong?" "Cindy, she is sitting down between sets." And I said, "Okay, you do not allow this in your gym, Xenia, correct?" I said, "Generally, I don't." "Okay, well, Cindy, now we have to start all over because she sits down in between." That's the kinds of things that we allow in this country, training-wise, and we still call it training. People are over there rambling on, having conversations, or they're getting a drink, or perspiration dropped in their eyes, so they have to towel their eye off, you know, because they don't want it to burn in their eye. Bologna. These are the sacrifices that it takes to be great. And so that you know, My system is designed to change the standard of the world, not meet the standard of the world. It's there to reach whatever humans are capable of. And I know we're capable of so much more, and we're capable of it without all the drugs. I mean, as I've gone through my career, everybody told me, well, you know, the Russians, the Bulgarian, the whole Eastern Bloc, it's nothing but drugs, nothing but drugs. Well, folks, we're all finding out today that the squeaky clean country of America has been massively in the drugs for many, many, many years. I had the opportunity and fortune to train a lot of elite European athletes, and they just laugh when somebody would talk about athletes from America being drug-free because they were on the same Grand Prix tour. They stayed in the same rooms. They trained together and watched what these people did. I mean, the drug use is massive. And why is it? Because you can easily then eliminate the hard part of training. And my system is very difficult. But when you come out of my system, I mean, there's nothing that you can't do, young, old, male, female. It doesn't matter the activity. You know, I took my wife, made her a world champion powerlifter in 6 months. Within this 6 months, she was in a car accident. She was sitting at a light. Light turned green. A woman ran a red light and drove her into a light pole. She was in a small Mitsubishi pickup truck, which crumbled on her. She had shoulder surgery, knee surgery, and they wanted to do back surgery. She wasn't my wife at the time, and she didn't know who else to call. So I did not let them do the back surgery, but they did the shoulder and the knee. And this was all within this 6 months, and she became a world champion. Not once did we bench press, did we squat, or did we deadlift. Not once. I had a kid from Temple, and ACL was the first ACL recovery that I ever did. And he was 264 pounds, 6'4 and 3/4, obviously a lineman, you know, a college football player. And in 4 months, we not only rehabbed his ACL, and we never once squatted, but when he went to school, he squatted 675. He cleaned 330 for a triple. The strength coach at Temple at the time was an Olympic weightlifter from Canada, one of their better lifters, and couldn't believe what he was able to display. He ended up being 292 pounds, had a 37 and 3/4 inch vertical jump. The coach thought he cheated to get this jump, so in front of the whole team, he pulled out the Vertec and made him jump again. He actually went 3/4 of an inch higher with his helmet and shoulder pads on. That's what this system can do. It's all about being in position, creating a deficit, using muscles at maximal velocity, maximal force capabilities, and turning on maximally. I mean, I got an email from one of the coaches from the University of Minnesota today highlighting this research by Comey and somebody else talking about, explosive training only produces minimal results. And they were using vertical jump. Well, what was the position of the individual when they executed the vertical jump? When they were training the jumps, were they all actually at maximal effort? By maximal effort, did they turn on maximally in as short a time as possible? If not, it's not explosive training. It's like Olympic lifting. I don't use it personally, but it would be awesome if you have one of the best in the world. But it takes years to prepare to lift Olympic style the way you need to produce results. Yet we have people using Olympic lifts all the time, and they spend a month or 2 months or 3 weeks training them. What a travesty for athletes. It takes years to prepare to be able to get anything out of them. Olympic lifts are freaking awesome, but they don't do anything in the unprepared athlete. So all of my exercises are simply chosen because there's not a lot of teaching. They're easily mastered. You can easily see when flaws occur. And the muscles are used in the same manner as they're used when you participate in life as a human, whether it's playing sport or getting in and out of chairs or in and out of cars or standing, you know, in line, like, you know, over the holidays, you stand in line a lot. And just look at people leaning off to one side, hands in their pockets, slouching. And then at the end of the holidays, oh, man, my back is sore. I've got to go see this guy. I've got to go to this doctor. Oh, I better get this muscle relaxant. Well, if we prepared them to use the muscles the way they're supposed to stand erect, it wouldn't be a problem. I mean, I'm sure all of you, I don't know, did we have, yes, we have a martial arts person?
Yes, we do.
Well, just the basic horse stance in martial arts. I mean, I've had some martial art people that will stand there for 2-3 hours at a time. You take a supposed football, baseball, basketball, wrestler, soccer, softball, whatever athlete, and put them next there, and within minutes, they're on their knees, whining and complaining. And this person will be there for hours, all because they're in the right position. By utilizing the muscles correctly, they're energetically efficient, and the world is wonderful. And that's all this system really is. It's so simple, and maybe that's why it's tough for people to understand or tough to want to try and understand, because it wasn't designed by some freaking high-tech computer whiz. You know, it's just humans, the way they move, the way they're supposed to move. You know, let's look at another example. Do any of you guys have children, young children?
Yeah, Jake, I got one.
Good. Well, when they get a cold and they're going to bed at night, what do? They try and breathe through their nose. They don't just breathe through their mouth, because they know the way to breathe is in and out through your nose. Okay, so they try to force it, and we hear them going, you know, and making all those strange noises, and we get the little bulb, and we clean out their nostrils so that they can breathe. But if you look at each other, wherever you're at right now, whether you're with family members or clients, whoever it is, and look at how many people breathe through their mouth. One of the things that I learned from coaches when I was in the Eastern Bloc was this, is that the cause and the root of most of our illnesses and diseases is because we don't fill the lower third of our lungs, because we never breathe deep enough. And that's in and out through the nose, because we never oxygenate things enough to kill off all these things and be able to fight them, and our immune system becomes depleted. I don't know if any of you are familiar with an omega wave, but when isoextremes at the greatest joint angle, what I call isoextremes, and again, everything I name is very simple. I'm very basic. I don't try and use $100 words with anybody, because then people are thinking about the words rather than focusing on what they're supposed to be. But when isoextremes are tested with the omega wave, it's totally unbelievable results. Unreproducible results. The only thing that came close was acupuncture. Now, the cool thing about isoextremes at the greatest joint angle is that you can do them hours and hours a day. It is all you ever really need. The only reason that I write other programs is because people don't want to pay me for the isoextremes at the greatest joint angle. And I have to make a living like all the rest of you.
Well, Jay, I got to tell a quick story. This is Chris. The last time I was there, and I'll be there again here in a couple of weeks. But there was a young man you had trained for a while. I believe he was a track and field athlete who was standing on your associate's shoulders, Charlie's shoulders, and he jumped off. I don't know. His feet were 7 feet plus in the air. Right. He came down, and he stuck a lunge, like, just perfect. And I'll be honest with you, hearing that is one thing. Seeing it, I still cannot go back and reproduce in my mind just how impressive it was to see.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, when you begin to talk and throw around numbers and throw around, you know, some of the results you've gotten with these athletes, they almost need to see something like this to make them understand just how impressive some of the results are. And I can honestly say, I cannot replay that picture in my mind. It was that impressive. Yet I saw it with my own eyes.
Yeah, you're talking about Kyle. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very, very impressive. So, you know.
Now, how tall that individual was, right, Chris?
how tall he was?
Yes.
Well,
he's 5'7" and a half, right?
Right. Yeah, he wasn't very tall.
Not at all.
No, he wasn't very heavy.
He can stand next to a 6-foot block wall and dipping his legs 3% of his total height, get high enough to jump over that wall. That's how fast he creates force. Now, he can do that multiple times. Why was this an important thing for me to do? Well, Jay, that's a good question. Because when I was in the Eastern Bloc, I watched people step off of heights 15 to 23 feet high and land in a squat position. Lower legs perpendicular, upper torso erect, head in line with the body, arms either crossed in front or at the side. When I started playing with things like that, I took a kid who was a tight end from Penn State. He was deathly afraid to squat because he was hurt squatting in school. And needless to say, Penn State was all machines at the time. And they may still very well be, I don't know. And he was getting ready to go into the pros. And he didn't possess any real velocity running speed. So he came to me and we had 3 weeks to work on it. And here's all we did for his legs. At the time, I had a 1986 Dodge Ram Charger, which if any of you remember those, if you're old enough, they were made of real metal. And we would climb onto the top of it. It had a 6-inch lift kit, and we would do one, as I call it, altitude drop per day. Now, not only did he run faster, he went from a 4.74 to a 4.59, but he was able to squat over 500 pounds without having squat in, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, all through college at least. And all we did was one of those per day. Now let's think about what's happening when you do that. How fast do you have to turn on before you hit the ground so that you don't break your feet, your ankles, your shins, your knees, your hips, your back? I mean, it's the ultimate in turning on. It's everything we desire as an athlete. It's high velocity, high load, and it's high volume just because the load is so high. The amount of work was huge.
Right.
Every day we did that, whether they wanted to or not. I mean, to this day, I train dogs for sled pulling. I trained them exactly the same way. We had a dog, an Alaskan Malamute, and the dogs were from Canada because real Malamutes, they're very large. They'll weigh 190 to 240 pounds.
Wow.
And mine was 194 pounds, female. And I called her Kilo, short for kilogram meter. And she pulled 10,000 pounds, 25 feet. Holy frickin' smoke, guys. Imagine if we could do that and muster that over and over and over. And whether you're a softball coach or a triathlete or a wrestling coach, football coach, martial arts, it doesn't matter. It's who turns on the fastest, who's in the right position when they turn on, and who can turn off and then repeat it again over and over and over. And if we have somebody to do that, then any, you can coach them to play softball and pitch or whatever your specialty is. And any, you can teach them wrestling holds. That's the easy part. The hard part is the physiological part. And it's the most misunderstood. And, I mean, for me to do this with you guys, this is very rare. Most people, if they don't ask me questions that I deem intelligent, and who am I? Well, I'm really nobody. I'm no smarter than anyone else in the world. I'm probably less intelligent than most of you. But what I've done is I've perfected using all these things, and I've ordered them and categorized them to produce duplicatable results over and over and over. But if I have people who ask me, well, what can this do for my athletes? I just ignore them. I move on to something else. There's a lot of people around this country who will tell you I'm a big jerk and very, you know, maybe even in stronger language. You see, I only care to speak with people and interact with people who truly want to create elite performance that's undeniable to anyone in the world. I'm a good story guy, so here's another one. I was meeting with Flip Saunders, Kevin McHale, their strength coach, their massage therapist, their trainer in my gym in Arizona. And they loved what they were seeing because I worked with several of their athletes while I was on a trip to Minnesota at one time. And then I made this really large mistake. I said, Flip, could you imagine if you could put five Michael Jordans on the floor at one time? You'd be totally unbeatable. Well, he went off on me. Michael Jordan was one of a kind. There'll never be another Michael Jordan. How could you be so blasphemous? Blah, 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 blah. And I didn't know what to say except, wow, if you believe that, then there never will be another Michael Jordan. You know, my influence of athletes, in case you're wondering, Jim Thorpe, Jesse Owens. Those are the guys that I look at. And not because they're guys, BD, okay? Because to be honest with you, I'd much rather train women any day. Because women are much tougher than men. But those two humans are what drive me to develop a system to make everyone as good as they are. Male, female, young, old, it doesn't matter. I mean, Chris, you've seen me. From my motorcycle accident, I can only raise my left arm to parallel. And yet, on a bench press, you would never know it.
Right.
You would never understand. I have no connective tissue in my right knee. Yet, I walk out there and run with my guys at 252 pounds, 49 years old. I ran a 4.42.40. I can pedal a bicycle from 0 to 42 miles an hour in a velodrome. You know, 250 pounds body weight when these people are, you know, 140, 150 pounds. My best standing long jump, and this is all after my motorcycle accident, was 11 foot 4. I could jump all the way across a driveway without touching either end. I could stuff a basketball behind my head, and I'm your basic 5 foot 10 white guy, you know? It's all from training because I am nothing special. I am just a human being like everybody else. I'm not smarter than anyone. I don't work harder than anyone. That, you know, that everyone's capable of all these things. We just have to push them far enough. And I kick people out of my gym on a regular basis. My wife will tell you, I don't know how much money I've lost in my career. Because people don't want to be the best. They just want to tell you they do. And this system and Chris getting involved in this system and anyone else who's experienced that's on the line now, this system will understand that. It is not for those who just want to get through. It's for those who want to destroy mediocrity and make elite performance the norm. All Michael Jordans in basketball and all whoever, Beanie, I'm sorry, I don't know any softball players, but all whoever the best would be in softball, and all the best Taekwondo people, and all the best triathletes, whoever it is that sets the standard, that's where we should all be. And that's what people don't understand, and they don't want to understand, and they want to stay within the minutia of overtraining, and, well, you don't want to, you know, get to burnout. That's totally out of
it. Hey, this is Eddie. And you can hang me up after I ask this dumb question. But anyway, you know, coaching football and coaching male sports, you're always looking for speed and explosion like you are in everything. But particularly in football, we're always after getting our guys bigger.
Yeah.
Putting mass on them, putting weight on them that's quality weight. Does this training you're talking about correlate to building muscle mass or just explosion?
Coach, I'll give you some examples. It's the best I can do. First of all, the philosophy of this system, one of the philosophies is the smallest, most powerful athlete always wins. The only time that may not be true is if you're in college or professional football and they need linemen to take up space so people have to go around them. And why is that? Because they're not strong enough to take on these people that are attacking them with a run. They're not fit enough. They're not quick enough to do it over and over and over. Now, with that said, I'll give you some examples. High school football players, in 3 months of doing nothing but iso extremes at the greatest joint angle, improving 40 times from the 4.7 to 5 flat range when they started to the 4.4 to 4.6 range, at the same time putting on 26 to 42 pounds of body weight. Now, I don't test body fat because I consider it a minutia thing. You can look at somebody and go, Coach, you're too fat. Chris, you're a little too fat. Jay, you're a little too fat. Okay, you don't need to test their body fat. What you need to do is look at them and look at how they hold position and look at how they move, what muscles initiate, what muscles absorb force, can the muscles turn on and turn off in rhythm so that this can happen. So, yes, you can gain weight. Now, on the other end, I don't know if any of you follow the super training forum at all. I usually don't, but the gentleman who is my right-hand man in Arizona, Charles Maka, usually does. I did a presentation at Holy Cross University a little over a year ago. And like I said, some of you might already know I'm somewhat controversial because I don't mince words. And I made a few enemies at this. And I'm not trying to make friends. I'm trying to create machines and athletic performance that is the standard that no one else can attain. And one of the largest detractors I had just about 2.5 months ago on super training said they decided to give what Jay Schroeder said a try, and they did iso extremes. And this person has been training themselves, I believe, for 12 or 13 years. And I don't know what kind of athlete they are. I'm going to say track and field. But they were able to lose 6% body fat, and I think it was 15 pounds of body weight in 3 weeks by doing nothing but iso extremes at the greatest joint angle. Now, what happens is that if you need to gain muscle mass, you will. If you need to lose fat, you will. Because the body, the physiology knows what to do. You just have to put it in a situation where it can occur. And you have to support that nutritionally. Again, we don't facilitate the use of supplements until absolutely necessary. There's only been a few people ever that I've trained where supplements are necessary. We don't do anything out of the ordinary until it's necessary. And those are levels that I've only had a few people ever attain. So, yes, the system can facilitate weight gain, strength gain, velocity, power, explosion, strength, endurance, velocity, endurance, whatever it is that you're looking for. Because it all comes down to this, being in the right position. And if while I'm talking, each of you would think about the sport you coach or the sport you participate in and think about the triathlete being on the bicycle, and you have to adjust your pedals correctly, and you have to adjust your handlebars fore and aft and up and down correctly. Because you have to be in the right position to be able to transfer all that force into the bicycle so that you can displace yourself horizontally. Or let's think about the softball coach holding a baseball bat or getting ready to throw the ball. Or let's think about the football coach when you go to get in a stance and you have to step out and block someone. Or if you're coaching a quarterback, what they have to do in order to throw a football. Everything, everything, everything is about position. So if you get in the right position and you facilitate the muscles to be used the way they were intended to be used, and you facilitate that with fueling correct, with the correct energy systems for a long enough period of time at a high enough load, you get everything you want. Again, it's so flipping simple. But people don't make a living on very simple things. You know, it's just the way it is. But if you truly follow it, it produces whatever you want. I mean, gaining weight, coach, is nothing more than more calories in than you expend. It's stimulating every system of your body to use what you put in the correct manner. You know, that's all it is.
Well, Aaron, I don't know how we're doing on time, but we're probably going to need to wrap this up because we have a limited amount of time for recording purposes.
Yeah, Chris, we can continue as long as everybody feels that they want. I've already extended the time on the recording, so that's not a problem.
Okay.
While I've got the audience here, Jay, let me ask you this. Back to your affinity question or the comment a moment ago. Was it Scott H. Mendelson? Was that the name he was after?
I didn't hear you. What was that? I'm sorry.
Scott Mendelson. Was that the gentleman you was referring to at Affinity Fitness?
I wasn't referring to anyone specifically, no.
Okay, that's my disregard.
You're talking about when I did the seminar at Holy Cross?
No, I thought you made mention earlier on in our talk that you was trying to find the name of somebody at Affinity Fitness. I just did a Google search and no problem.
Oh, no, I wasn't. No, I don't even know that name. I'm sorry.
No problem. No. All right, so let me ask you this thing.
He's in Las Vegas. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
And it's something density training is what he has. So.
Okay, no problem.
Right.
All right, Chris, so what do you want to do? You want to continue? What do you want to do from here?
Yeah, well, guess what? I mean, we could certainly go on for forever, but, you know, one of the things that I certainly do want to make sure and do, and that is make sure that everybody knows that, you know, if you think this is good, wait till you get to the live seminar, and the live seminar will be held in Birmingham, Alabama, at Pelham High School. It will be March 1st. The time is still to be announced, which we will certainly put on the website and everything when everything is ready. But it will be March 1st. That's a Saturday, and I certainly think that, you know, if you what you heard tonight at all sparks your interest, I think that you'll find the live seminar that much more. We heard nothing but tremendous feedback from everyone that went to the last seminar, which was, Jay, it was in Columbia, Missouri, correct?
Yeah, the University of Missouri. We had 100 people there and coaches from all over the country as well as the University of Missouri coaches. In fact, it was so interesting to them, they had me stay on for Sunday. I met with all the University of Missouri coaches for 8 hours.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we certainly hope to have the same thing here because a lot of times what you hear, you know, Chris Scarborough say about Jay is one thing, and then to hear hear Jay live is a completely different thing. And, you know, I'm just a protege. I'm not the man at this point in time. So, you know, I'm learning along with everyone else. And that's, you know, learning to put everything I've got, you know, physically, mentally, spiritually, intellectually, everything into it, just like everyone else is. So, once again, I invite everyone, Pelham High School, March 1st. We will begin at around 9 a.m., although the time will be to be announced. And I want to certainly thank everyone who was on the line tonight to take time out of their schedule. And, Jay, in particular, I want to thank you for being on here tonight.
Yeah, hey, I mean, I have a more time if there's some questions that are stimulated, because I threw out a lot of interesting things.
Yes, you did.
I'm sure they stimulate questions. That's my modus operandi, is not to give information, but it's to stimulate people to ask questions, to gather information, to formulate their own philosophy and opinion, and take what Jay has done and make it something that Jay could never make it. There's a sign that hangs in my office. I have three offices, and in each one, the same sign hangs. And it says, the measure of my ability is based on the number of my students that come back and destroy me.
Huh. Right.
It's about the system. And no one has asked about the ARP and how the ARP is employed in the system. No one's asked about that. Did anyone want to ask?
Well, let's come back to that real quick, Jay. I believe our volleyball coach had an additional question for you real quick.
Yeah, Feeney, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. I was just curious, you know, within the college ranks, we're we're confined by time a lot of times. So, Jay, with the system that you're talking about, you know, in the fall we get 3 hours in the weight room, basically, and then in the spring, once our season starts, we're limited to about two hours max, just because of the NCAA constraints. So, you know, within that amount of time, I mean, how much improvement or, you know, how much do you think our athletes could get done, you know, within that amount of time?
Well, the training sessions never last longer than an hour. Sometimes
3 a week could achieve some of the things you're talking about?
Well, personally, I do not believe that 3 a week will be able to accomplish the things that I'm talking about. But, Coach, here's the deal. They could do this in their dorm room. When they wake up in the morning, and this is what I usually give to my collegiate athletes, they wake up in the morning and they perform 2 to 4 minutes of some ISO extreme. And before they go to bed, they do another 2 to 4 minutes. And then with what they get during the 3 days of training per week, they get more than enough. They get everything they need.
Okay.
It's easy to do. There's no equipment necessary. I have a couple of high schools in Arizona that I work with, and they were prepared to spend huge amounts of money on equipment. And when I came in, I said, no, get rid of this, get rid of this, get rid of this. Just give me space and dumbbells. And that's all I need. And they went and they looked at me like, you're a nutcase. You have to have equipment to do this. And as soon as they saw, after a couple months, as soon as they saw results happen, because obviously people are going to test because they want to, whether you ask them to or not, they'll go and they'll test. And people's bench presses were going up 50, 60 pounds. And squats were going up 130 or 140 pounds. In this short amount of time, yet we didn't squat, we didn't bench press or do any of these things, and it didn't necessitate any of this equipment. I have one high school, and I haven't done it in a year, but my assistant Charles does, where there's 140 people at one time, and all the work is done and accomplished in 57 minutes. 57 minutes. And so that you know, all of the conditioning is done at that exact same time. So the football coaches and the track coaches and the wrestling coaches and almost every sport participates. There's a few who don't, but almost everyone does. They get all their conditioning and their strength work and their velocity work and everything else that you might want to term it in this 57-minute period. And it's done Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Or there's another group of 140 to, I think that's even larger, it might be 165 kids, that go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So they only get their 3 days, but they're given homework to do when they wake up in the morning, and it takes just a brief amount of time. It isn't like they have to spend hours and they have to prepare to do it. They can wake up, do their due diligence in the restroom, and execute this, eat their breakfast, and move on. It takes little or no time.
Coach, right. You mentioned nobody had asked about the arc. What are you talking about? What is the arc?
Well, the easiest thing to do would be after we talk, or if you have a computer in front of you, get on www.arpwave.com. Now, I started using the ARP specifically about 9 years ago with Dennis Thompson. He saw me on ESPN using an ElectroStim 182i. And I was making it work. You know, with most electric stims, they put you in concentric contraction, and we all know that's where injuries occur, and that's where energetically we're inefficient and all these bad things. You know, if we want to use the term overtraining now, it's appropriate. It's where they occur, when muscles are not eccentrically elongated. So I was making this concentric electric stim work to eccentrically elongate muscles. And he saw me training Adam Archuleta for 40. Adam never once ran during the years that I trained him, only what he had to do at Arizona State. He did everything they required, and they required a whole lot. Plus, he trained with me multiple sessions per day, 7 days a week. And this was through the season and everything else. But basically what happens with the ARP is this. is it causes muscles to eccentrically elongate immediately when that stimulus is given. Contractions are 500 times per second. Imagine what happens in just 2 minutes of work, Coach. How many contractions is that? How long would it take us in a weight room to do that many contractions? Almost all of my training done in my facility is done with the ARP alone now. We don't even use any equipment. It's there because... What's that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish your thought. I'll ask in a minute.
Okay. Coaches come in and they expect to see equipment. So, yes, it's there, but we don't use it. We use the ARP. I have a kid right now, Spencer Larson, University of Arizona, led the Pac-10 in tackles, led the Pac-10 in tackles for a loss, and I believe he was second in sacks. And I've been training him since eighth grade. And needless to say, there were times where he wasn't able to train with me because the coaches there made him do what he had to do. And Tucson is an hour and 35 to 50 minutes, depending on traffic, away from my facility. And he just blows away people. When he trained under their system, he was hurt on a regular basis, hamstrings, low back, ACL. He came into us again during ACL rehab. We rehabbed him with the ARP, and you can look at it on the website. It'll give you the information on what our program is like. And we started strength training again. At that time, he was running a 4.940. Now, 4.9 takes you nowhere fast, even if you make all the tackles in the Pac-10. It takes you nowhere fast. He's been back with us for 2 weeks. Today, Charles called me. He ran a 4.51 at 257 pounds. He was 239 when he came back two, three weeks ago. You remember we had Christmas in there. And so that you know, on Christmas Day, I was in Arizona, so I trained him. And Christmas Eve, I trained him. Because physiology takes no days off. So birthdays, holidays, you know, weekends, there's no such thing as a day off. Your body has to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And he's made these rapid changes. His wife, he's married, has a child and another child on the way. His wife cannot believe how his body has changed in this amount of time. Now, she was revolting about him coming and training with us because it's rather expensive. And she told Charles today she cannot believe the results that were produced. It's worth whatever amount of money they would have to pay because it's going to come back to him in his professional career. And we did this in 3 weeks. So can you gain weight? Can you do all these things in a short amount of time? Hell yes, you can. You ought to see this kid train. People actually come in to make sure he's still alive when he leaves. But he's able to do it every single day. We have a little routine that I call the DM routine. It's named after Dan Machaychuk. I believe he went to the University of South Florida. I had him getting ready for the NFL, like 6 or 7 years ago. And the routine goes like this. We put on a base of 235 pounds. And then we put 10-pound plate, 10-pound plate, 10-pound plate on top of that. We start by doing 6 reps. At the end of the 6th rep, the bar is held at the top. One of the 10-pound plates is pulled off. Immediately do 3 reps. While the bar is held at the top, the next 10-pound plate is pulled off, and you do 1 rep. While holding at the top, they pull the last 10-pound plate off, and they do as many reps as possible. Now, we do this routine 2 or 3 times a day. Spencer, when he started at the end of his football season, went 6.317. Today, he went 6.319. Now, you tell me how many reps he's going to be able to do with 225. In the middle of a training session, he was able to do, so that you know, 15 and a half reps with 225 when he reported to me a few weeks ago. In the middle of a training session, he now does 29 reps. In the middle of a training session. This is in 3 weeks. No special diet, no supplements. We utilize the ARP for recovery. We utilize the ARP to eccentrically elongate muscles that tend to concentrically shorten as you begin to fatigue on a bench press. Any imagine, as a pitcher, if you could be as fresh on the 100th pitch as you were on the first several pitches.
Yeah,
how many games could that person win?
Now, the China pitcher did that 2 years ago. In the seventh inning, she's still pitching 70 miles an hour.
Absolutely. And you should That's be able awesome. To do it day after day after day. This baseball stuff where pitchers pitch once every 3 days or 5 days or whatever, how ridiculous is that? We spend millions of dollars on them. They should pitch every day. But they don't prepare to do that. And this system, in conjunction with the ARP, can prepare someone to do that in a relative short amount of time. A short amount of time to me means it usually takes 3 to 5 years to prepare someone for elite performance. With this system and training, it can be done in 1 to 3.5 years, depending on how disciplined the individual is.
So, Jay, do you use the ARP during their workout? So you kind of intermittently do the workout and then the ARP, or do they do it at the end?
Oh, it's done in all sorts of matters, depending on the supercompensatory effect that we're looking for. What energy system are we training that day? What is it we're hoping to get out of this exercise? What adaptation are we looking for? This system is so sophisticated in its simplicity that let me give you an example of what can be done. And I'll use Adam Archuleta as the example. Okay? We can go out and we could train specifically starting strength, velocity endurance, or max velocity, and not affect any other part of his run in a negative manner. That's how sophisticated this is. We can train velocity endurance only. Holy smoke. That means when I was consulting to the Green Bay Packers, Reggie White was there. And I don't know if everyone's aware, but they used to move him around anywhere from nose tackle to defensive end to playing defensive end like an outside linebacker. And they all necessitate slightly different physiological qualities. One, you want to be very powerful because the center is going to attack you immediately. Another one, you want to have velocity. Another one, you want to have strength endurance. And I was training him to possess these abilities or enhance these abilities each week. That's how amazing this system is. But you have to perfect the basics. You have to master the basics. And the basic is iso-extreme at the greatest joint angle. See, the Russians were experimenting with isometrics. Pat O'Shea at the University of Oregon was experimenting with isometrics.